Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Francisco. It's nice to see you.
Likewise. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm here in the studio, so that's on my mind. Week number two. It feels so good to sit in my chair with my name on the back of it. Makes me feel like I'm at home a bit, so that's really nice. And I guess what else is on my mind is how we all are doing as we come back to familiar places and to parts of our lives that were once a routine and now feel a little unfamiliar. My husband started back to work in person last week for the first time in 15 months. And I was asking him last night how he was doing. And he's a pretty easygoing guy. As you can imagine, someone who's married to a psychotherapist is probably pretty earthbound. And so he's pretty pragmatic. But he said, it's really strange. I'm having a really hard time kind of getting my sense of balance. I can't remember the word he used last night. That's what a good listener I am. No. But he was, you know, kind of talking about how he got so used to the routine, because he likes a routine of, you know, doing his job from home, that going back to work almost in some ways feels like a disruption to the routine that he'd settled into. Because there's, when you go into work, there's a whole different dynamic. It's not just about sitting at your table, getting your coffee and getting started. It is a lot of the social piece that comes to being in a work environment. And just like coming back here and getting to see everyone and, you know, kind of finding that banter that we once had, or checking in with each other, or catching up on 15 months, whatever that looks like. So I kind of decided that I would leave today's show open-ended. I have, you know, a direction in mind, but I wanted to leave it open-ended because I really wanted to open up the phone lines to callers, to my listeners, to those of you who have been hanging in there the last 15 months and tuning into the show and sending emails. I'm ready to hear your voices again. And so I wanted to kind of open up the phone lines and check in, just do a mental health check. How is everyone since the last time we talked? Which is a great therapist line. How have you been since the last time we talked? And let you kind of sort that through. So that's kind of the overall theme for this week, is just a little check-in to see how everyone is. A big check-in, actually. It's not a little check-in. It's a really big check-in. But I also want to set the stage for things that are going on kind of universally for people as we move through this process. And I even hesitate to say as we come out of the pandemic, because of course, you know, the news every day talks about new variants and going back to masks. And so now I'm not so sure, you know, I can use words like moving forward or coming out of. So I will say them with a little bit of hesitation. But what's interesting is, for many people, the idea was, once we get through this pandemic, everything will be okay. Once they get through into the other side, then we'll just go back and our life will be what it was and we'll just carry on. But it really isn't that simple. And I think for many people, and I'm feeling a bit of this, and my husband's feeling a bit of this, and my friends and my kids, I feel confident that this is something that we're all grappling with in some way, is that we may be coming through this, but we're not emerging as we were when we started out. I don't know if that makes sense. We're not coming out of this the people we were that we went in to this as. And I guess what I'm curious about is, how are we changing? How have we changed? You know, for myself, I'm not super social, which might surprise you, but I'm not a super social person. And because I do a lot of talking for my living. And so I was way too comfortable being able to kind of be at home and be with my family and not have to put the energy out to socializing. But now that the opportunity to be social has emerged again, I'm not picking up the phone and calling my girlfriends. And I think about them every day. Cindy, Jennifer, Maggie, start listing everybody's names, Sherry. I think about you every day. And yet the let's get together and have lunch hasn't popped into my calendar, hasn't popped into my energy level yet. And I'm wondering why. Why am I not connecting with my friends right now? Why am I not making those lunch dates? I don't know why I'm not feeling that need to see everyone, or that rush to get out to go to the movies, or that rush to go, you know, to hear live music, or, you know, things that I did actually enjoy doing. I don't know if I've just gotten so comfortable in the not being able to do those things, if I've created a whole different routine of my life, that now I'm just in a rut in a whole different way, that, or just in the routine of a whole nother way of being. Maybe part of it is, you know, you're not feeling that it's really safe yet, that there's been mixed messages or different reports that have come out about the pandemic or the safety going outside. And so you're still hanging on to the mask or hanging back. I'm not quite ready to get back out there. And then I'm wondering about just this whole different lens through which we see the world. Do the things that mattered as much to you before March 17 of 2020 matter as much to you today, 15 months later? What has shifted in your priorities? How are you seeing the world differently, or the way you want to spend your time, or what you see as your future? And so from a mental health perspective, the National Association of Mental Illness and different mental health groups and the American Psychiatric and Psychological Associations, what they're seeing is almost a delayed reaction. That for many people going into the pandemic, they went into a survival mode. We're just going to get through. We're going to hunker down. And in some way, having this kind of universal challenge, trauma, emergency, disaster bearing down on all of us, people who in some parts of their life might have struggled before the pandemic, maybe had some anxiety or depression or were feeling stressed or unhappy with their lives, actually found themselves thriving during the pandemic because it gave them this sense of purpose or focus or something to work towards or to help other people. That, interestingly, the pandemic, the disaster, helped people who had been kind of struggling with generalized anxiety about life and the purpose of life, honed in on this event. And so they've spent the last 15 months really being proactive, helping neighbors, redoing their life, taking classes, fixing up their house, and really being more active and more proactive in their choices than they had been before the pandemic. But as we move forward, and again, I say that hesitantly, as we move to wherever we're going next, people who kind of rose to the occasion of the disaster are starting to settle down and take a breath and look around because the emergency seems to have passed. And now they're starting to have the reaction of anxiety or depression or fear post the disaster, post the pandemic. These feelings start to emerge because our psyches are brilliant. We might not enjoy the way our psyche quite often addresses or deals with emergencies. We might not enjoy the way our psyche adapts to different parts of our life, but our psyches are really amazing. And the psyche is always trying to help us thrive and survive. And so in moments of disaster and universal shutdowns like the pandemic, the psyche kind of puts a bubble around us and helps us focus and move through and do what needs to be done. But as the disaster emergency passes, then that veil of protection from the psyche starts to subside. And then those feelings of actually being alive and connected and breathing come forward, and you can feel yourself being overwhelmed with grief and fear and anxiety and depression. And you might wonder, why now, when I'm not in danger, am I absolutely falling apart? And if you are, that's normal. If you are, that's okay, because it is the result of your psyche kind of taking down the threat level and allowing you to start feeling things again that are right in front of you. And for many of us, what we need to feel is grief, sadness, loss. I lost 2 friends in the last 15 months to COVID, and I haven't processed that at all, to be honest, because we haven't been able to get together and talk. I haven't been able to meet with my friends who we all grew up together and who have lost this mutual friend that we'd known since elementary school. We haven't been able to gather. And so now that grief is starting to bubble up. Now, a year later, I'm starting to realize that she's no longer in my life. And so I'm just curious where you are and how you've been since we last talked. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. It feels good to say that and to know that you can call in and be able to talk to me on the air. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also send us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist on Instagram. Post the shows. I have a picture being back in the studio in there today. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org, and all of our shows are there for you to listen to. Or you can podcast the show by going to wherever you look for podcasts, search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the show will be uploaded for you to listen at your convenience. And the good news is that Francisco is so quick with everything that as soon as the show is over, it's already ready for podcasting. So you can also write a review and share it with friends. So I'm going to catch my breath, and we're going to take a quick break. And we'll come back and open up those phone lines, and I look forward to hearing from you. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Back in the studio, wanting to know how you've been since we last spoke. Our number is 805-781-3875. There are some familiar voices that I have missed hearing from, so I look forward to catching up and want to know, how have you been? Are you feeling any of that rising anxiety as the pandemic seems to pass that I described before? Are there changes that you've made over the last 15 months that you're going to stick to? Have you found a new normal or a new routine? How has your lens about your life moving forward shifted throughout the last 15 months? You know, it's really important to talk about and to normalize kind of what we've been through from a mental health perspective, because that's what I do. And I just want to remind you that it is completely normal when a disaster passes or danger has passed to have an emergence of those physical and psychological issues that might have been tamped down or pushed aside while we were just kind of going through the process of getting by or surviving what's happening. I mean, think of, you know, those moments in your life that there's been another kind of emergency. Maybe one of your children are sick, or you're dealing with the loss of a loved one in some way, or, you know, you lose the job, whatever that might have been, and how you kind of pull up the bootstraps and you get really effective and you find yourself taking charge and being able to handle whatever that emergency is. And then you find that past this emergency, or I think students, you know, experience this in school, that they study for an exam and they're really focused and the quarter goes really quickly. And then as soon as the quarter ends, they go home and they get sick, you know, end up in bed, completely exhausted, not being able to, you know, kind of move forward. But they were so productive during school. And that, again, is the magic of the psyche at work. One of the other things that was interesting over the last year, or just kind of coming out of this year, that the National Mental Health Agencies have noticed, and I'm not really sure, I mean, I think there's a few reasons for this, but over the course of 2020, the rates of suicide in this country dropped by 13% nationally. Which might be really surprising, and in some ways might not be. Now, if you look at suicide rates just in general, white people tend to have higher rates of suicide than people of color. And what happened during the pandemic is that these statistics actually shifted. BIPOC folks have had higher rates of suicide and suicidal ideation throughout the pandemic, just as they have had higher rates of loss and struggles and a hard time navigating through the pandemic and even getting sick with the flu than those in the white population. So what shifted? We know that the pandemic didn't hit all populations in all neighborhoods and all parts of the country equally. It hit the most vulnerable and marginalized areas the greatest, to the greatest degree. But when you look at the suicide rates dropping in more privileged communities, I think it's important to look at that number as an indication of how out of balance things were in white communities, white privileged communities prior to the pandemic. Because you see teenagers and middle-aged men, white men, have the highest rates of suicide in our general population in normal, in quotation marks, periods of time. But these rates dropped. And I think part of it can be associated to the quarantine, to the lockdown, because you had families now together, all together, spending time together, you know, however that looked, whether it was, you know, everyone at grandparents' house or at the parents' house, but there was a lot more of a collective experience. And what's unique to white nuclear families is they tend to be very isolated, and it tends to impact mental health, depression, anxiety, tends to be one of the reasons why teenagers have higher rates of suicidal ideation or suicide attempts, because there's a lot of isolation in our normal day-to-day existence. And so if there's one little side note lesson that can be taken from this, it might not be something that researchers are paying attention to, is that this drop of 13% in suicide rates should be a sign that being together, having more time, dropping the intense workloads, cutting back on insane amounts of extracurricular activities or the pressure to excel in every extracurricular activity might be one of the things driving those suicide rates. I mean, we know they are not might be. We know that prior to the pandemic, the intense pressure focused on adolescents and high-achieving family systems was part of the struggle with mental health. Then conversely, when you look at BIPOC populations, where you saw an actual increase in suicide rates during the pandemic, the lesson there is how little social support there actually was during this disaster. Even though their families also were in lockdown and in quarantine, the safety net, the economic safety net, wasn't really there for these families. And when you don't have an economic safety net, if everyone in the family loses their job, or grandma and grandpa don't have a place to live, or you don't have access to health care, then you see the greater burden of a disruption like this pandemic on families who have marginalized access to resources. So two obvious lessons to learn when it comes to mental health. One is we need to rethink what our day-to-day looks like. And I'm curious if anyone's actually done that, made any significant changes to their day-to-day, made any significant changes to their routines or expectations or to their goals. And for those in communities that have less access to resources, that tend to be marginalized in general, in the general state of the world, how do we build in better safety nets so that people of color, people in poorer communities, people who live in food deserts or have more inconsistent employment, how do we set up those safety nets for these families so that we go through another crisis, which we will? That's part of life. We come in and out of crises and then good times and then crises and good times, falling together, coming apart. How do we prepare moving forward to address that? And do we have the bandwidth to even come together? So I'm curious to know, 781-3875, 805-781-3875 is our number. How have you been since we last talked? Do you feel like you've made some changes in your life or not? Do you feel like you've come through the pandemic with a greater sense of mental health and well-being? Or are you feeling that post-COVID reaction, feeling that the stress or the magnitude of what we've all just lived through is just starting to hit you now? Are you looking forward to anything moving forward? You know, for my husband and I don't know if I mentioned this before, because it all feels like the last year has been such a blur, but we had our family living at home with us for the beginning of the pandemic and then kind of shifted back to their lives outside of the house. But we've been much more connected throughout the last 15 months, spending a lot more time together because there wasn't anyone else to spend time with. Didn't get to see my parents and brothers and sisters. But my husband and I had done this, you know, for many years. Someday we will. I don't know if you've ever had that conversation with your loved ones. Someday we will. And then that list will be go on a vacation or improve our house or take that time to just sit and chat or we'll move somewhere exotic. You know, what are those someday I wills that are on your mind or that are kind of out in the future? For us, that someday I will or we will make a change in our life, live someplace different, do something different. Because he went to college here in San Luis Obispo. I went to UC Santa Barbara. So we've been here on the Central Coast for a really long time, 40 years. And as wonderful it is, there's always that voice in the back of our head and also in conversations. And every summer we would do these shows from the road. Someday we will do something radically different. And so during the pandemic, we actually did something radically different and found this place in Montana where I've been doing some of the shows the last few months. And it's been really, I was going to say incredible and use all those kind of, you know, typical adjectives. It's amazing. It's incredible. But it's different than that. It feels new. It feels, I don't know what the right word to use. I probably should have thought about it before I started talking about it. The experience of starting something new together, I guess that's probably the best way to put it, because we've been married for 36 years. We've been together for 41 years. We raised two kids. We're grandparents now. We've both had careers for a really long time. And I turned 60 in March, which kind of came and went with no fanfare, just kind of was what it was. But it felt like there was one more chapter or story in our life. And I wasn't quite sure what it was. And we would talk about it. And we're not really like the go cruise people or, I don't know, take up a pottery class. Or we knew kind of the things that we weren't, but we knew there was something different we would try or do or experience together as a couple. And so this has been a really a sense of renewal for us, a sense of starting a new project, something to lay in bed at night and talk about, a way to kind of cope with all of the changes and losing friends and seeing kind of the change in our social groups here as people have moved into different parts of their lives. It feels really exciting. I guess I feel in some ways, I don't feel 19 again. I don't know if I'd like to be 19 again, but that sense of optimism for, hey, we've got things to look forward to or something that we can accomplish or something we can do together has been really, really life affirming. And so maybe that's why part of the energy or the interest in getting back to old routines hasn't really been there as fully for both of us, because we're kind of living in two split realities. One of them is here with our children and our grandchildren. We had a new grandbaby 6 months ago, and that's been wonderful. So there's that life that is familiar and feels grounding and gives our life a sense of balance. But then there's this crazy thing we've done out on the side that's out in a whole nother state that when we're there, we feel totally different and energized and terrified and all of those, you know, things that happen when you make a really bold move in your life. And it's a way of feeling alive that's just different, not way better or transformative or long overdue, but just different and exciting. So that's a little bit about where we've been and how that change has come over us and kind of what the pandemic and post-pandemic life has looked like. Clearly, Francisco, I'm the only one who's been thinking about these things.
I mean, I've been thinking about them too, you know, like I'll think about like, you know, how my life has changed within the last 15 or so months. I can't believe it's been 15 months, but I mean, I think about it too. I'll admit, you know.
Do you feel more optimistic now than you did a year ago, or have your goals changed?
I'd say I feel more optimistic because I feel like my goals have changed, if that makes sense.
Say it again.
I feel more optimistic now only because my goals in life have changed.
Okay. But did they change before we went into the pandemic, or is that something that has changed in the last few months?
I'd say it's changed throughout the pandemic. Okay. So this is definitely something that has been, you know, my goals changing in life has definitely been a process spearheaded by COVID, mm-hmm. for better and worse.
Yes. And better and worse is kind of the whole thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's like, I mean, all things considered, I feel myself, you know, I somehow made it through and I'm very grateful to have gone through this entire pandemic, knock on wood, not having contracted COVID or anything like that. And I feel fortunate to have engaged in change and self-growth and actualization. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this the last 15 months still sucked. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Well, and I imagine, too, depending on where you are in your life, before we went into the pandemic, I think it had different impacts as well. Because if you look at someone who's, you know, has young children at home that are 3, 4, 5, or 6, and maybe multiple young children at home, that is a much bigger impact or different. I'm going to say bigger, but a different impact than maybe empty nesters who are at home and didn't get to see their grandchildren or their kids over a period of time. So wherever we are in life, there are different struggles or different levels of how we struggled. And again, I wonder too, for some people, if the whole struggle itself hasn't even come to the surface, which is what I started the show with today, that it's very normal to get into a period of time, which is an emergency, a disaster, a trauma, and you fully function. Some people say, well, I never did better. I got into an exercise routine and I took care of myself and I took care of my family and we did great and we got through this and it was really amazing. But then to have this huge dip after the emergency passes, after the disaster seems to have been rectified, then all of the feelings come up, then the grief, then the anxiety, then the fear has a place to live and come up post the pandemic. And so how have you been? Our number is 805-781-3875. I'd love to hear from you. What's on your mind today? Michael, it's nice to hear from you.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Well, I've been listening to you describe this experience of coming through the pandemic with a greater sense of hope and fulfillment and hope. And it's just not reflecting my experience at all.
Okay, good. Tell me what your experience has been.
Well, a little bit of background. My wife died in 2019. And I was hit very, very hard. I still have not bounced back. But my experience in the months immediately after she passed and before the pandemic, my experience was a lot of people coming out of the woodwork to talk to me, to spend time with me, to do things for me, just my friends basically connected with me in a big way. And when the pandemic hit, that stopped. And I have spent the last 15 months basically marking time.
Michael. And how have you been marking that time?
Oh, I've spent a lot of time on Facebook. And other social networking sites. And I've spent a certain amount of time watching television. My house is a mess. I have not spent time cleaning or doing all of these productive things. It's just been, frankly, it's been a slog. The idea that there's no place that I can go to blow off steam for a little while, the idea that restaurants were closed, stores were closed, any destination that I might have wanted to go to, the movie theater was closed, everything was shut down, and I was basically housebound, and there was nothing to get me out of my head.
Your housebound memories.
I'm sorry?
Is it your housebound with memories?
It's been a slog, let me tell you. Some of those memories are delightful, but it's not the context in which you want to be remembering those things.
No. When I imagine, too, with grief, that first year, and I talked about it a little at the beginning of the show, that first year when we go through a shock or a loss, our psyche kind of protects us with this bubble. And just as you were kind of coming out of that protective bubble and probably really having to face the loss of your wife, the pandemic hit. And so you were raw with your feelings and the support of your community and on your own. And so here we are. 15 months later, where are you at today?
I'm about to go into work.
Okay.
I've been trying to get into work as much as I can. I've been calling in more than I really should. But just going to work, doing my job, coming home, spending more time than I need to asleep, spending more time than I need to on the computer, as I said. But just going to work and coming home.
How's your energy?
Not very high. Not very high.
Are you
these
eating?
15 months, these 15 months have felt like I was basically put on hold. You know, you called in to deal with some business with deal with something and they stick you on hold for hours.
Yes.
I feel like I've been on hold for 15 months.
Yeah. In suspended animation.
Yeah, kind of.
So what is one thing that might feel different for you moving forward? Is what's the little nugget of light in your life? Because there's, I'm sure there's a little nugget of something that gets you out of bed in the morning.
Well, sometimes no, there isn't, but I'm basically an optimistic person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting out of bed every morning with the understanding that sooner or later it's going to be better.
But I imagine you'd like to know when.
Well, yes, that would help a little bit.
Let me just rub my magic ball a little bit, and I'll see the future for you.
I thank you very much. You be sure and get back to me with that information as soon as you get it.
Well, and Michael, the fact that you took the time to call me tells me that you're looking for that crack of light and you're moving towards it.
That's what it tells me, too.
Yeah. Something made you pick up the phone.
I was just listening to you talk about how, you know, some people come through the pandemic with this renewed sense of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start feeling anxiety once the crisis is actually passed.
Yes.
It was so not my experience. I just felt like I had to stop and say something.
I'm glad you did, because that's how we start to find our balance again as a community, is to start sharing with each other what we've been through, right? We've got war stories to swap from the last 15 months. And you started off telling me, and I hope that you'll tell someone else and swap their stories too, because that's how we're going to find our way to where what's next.
Okay, then. I'll make a point of doing that.
That's your homework, because what you're feeling is what other people are dying to share. Maybe not the same stories, but I think everyone wants to talk about what they've felt and what they've experienced. And if you open the door, and the thing that's interesting, and I'm sure you've maybe felt this or not felt this, because you had the loss of your wife and people haven't been with you for 15 months, that they might be scared to approach you. Like, how's Michael doing? I don't know. I don't want to bring it up and make him cry or make it worse. So I'll say nothing at all. So it might take you opening the door first, saying, hey, here's how crappy my 15 months were. How have you been? And in some way that will free them to also open up and come forth and engage with you again. You almost in some ways have to start it off.
I'll take that under advisement.
All right. Thank you. And I hope you'll call me again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Enjoy your day. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break and come back to our calls. Debbie in Santa Barbara, hang on. We'll be back to you in just a minute. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I have a voice, started out as a whisper, turned into a scream, made a beautiful noise, shoulder to shoulder marching in the street. When you're all alone, it's a quiet break, but when you band together, it's a choir of thunder and rain. Now we have a choice, 'cause I have a voice. I'm not living to die, don't stand in a wasteland, look me in the eye, stop living a lie and stand up next to me. You gotta put one foot in front of the other, with a hand in a hand, holding on to each other. Go on and rejoice.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we are back in the studio. I get to talk to you again. So here's the question on the table. How have you been since we last talked? What has your 15 months been? Michael's, it's been a slog. How did you come through, or are you coming through? Were you anxious throughout the process and starting to feel okay now? Were you okay and now starting to feel anxious? Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today? Hi.
So what's interesting, Elizabeth, was I just listened to you for the first time, and what you were saying at the start of your broadcast really resonated with me. And then in the meantime, while I was on hold, I heard Michael's conversation. which also resonated with me because I also lost my husband to brain cancer right before COVID. So I can relate to what he was saying. But what I wanted to say about your first conversation is that's exactly how I've been feeling. That I've been trying to check in to find out why I don't have the same desire to do the things, you know, that I did before. And I thought exactly what you said, which is we've all been through this traumatic experience and we were all kind of in a fight or flight kind of situation. And it was going to take a little minute when things subsided to let it all seep in and
yes.
kind of realize. So that's the first part. But then the second part, as far as what I felt with the loss of my husband, every day during COVID, I felt grateful that he wasn't still alive because he was in and out of the hospital. He was in the hospital for 48 straight ones. And I just thought of if I couldn't have been there, my daughter couldn't have been there. If he would have been alone, it would have been horrible. So I've been really staying in gratitude about those things.
It's interesting how that changes the magnitude of not wanting him to live through COVID, but then feeling the loss of him in your life and how
right.
you can find gratitude in that. It's powerful.
I just feel like, you know, and I also could really empathize and relate to all the people that were losing loved ones daily, you know, because I was still grieving and I was still feeling those things. So it was a really interesting experience for me and still is.
And so how do you feel, and maybe it's too soon to have any introspection or retrospection about what's happening, but what is one thing you feel has changed in you that surprises you?
Well, I became very, very zen. I'm normally a very direct, I would say, not afraid of confrontation, speak my mind kind of person. And during COVID, the first encounter I had with somebody that wasn't a good one, I thought to myself, I have to change this program. I can't argue with crazy. So I stopped doing that, and I thought, I can only control me. I can't do anything about what other people are doing. So if I have to walk by somebody and then I want to put a mask on, then I'm just going to walk a different way, mm-hmm. you know? So it'll be interesting to see if that ends up staying with me. So far it is, but I don't know if it'll continue.
Well, it's almost like the priorities and the things like pre-COVID annoyances became really irrelevant. I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, and also on the heels of going through a horrible glioblastoma, you know, diagnosis with my husband and then him passing away, then COVID hitting, everything seems, you know, unimportant in the scope of those things.
Yeah. And I think, Debbie, part of the challenge and at this point becomes how do you find things that matter moving forward.
Right. Like that's what you were saying at the beginning of, you know, the show about not knowing why you don't have the same interest in going to lunch with your girlfriends and going to the movie theater. That's exactly how I feel. I don't feel depressed. I don't feel, you know, that I'm in a funk, therefore I don't want to do it. I just feel like I'm really sitting with it, trying to figure out what it is because I can't quite identify what it is.
I agree.
It sounds like you were feeling the exact same way.
Yes. And it is, and it's hard to put words to because it feels bratty in some ways to say, I just am not up to it. But yeah, I feel this, this real shift in my lens towards my world.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I've always been a person that I like my own company, so I could handle the aloneness. I mean, it was a lot just because of, again, coming on the death of my husband. And then my daughter, who was helping me caregive, also left. So all of a sudden, it was just me and my little dog.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel that wasn't the loneliness part. What's weird is just that now that things are, you know, going back to semi-normal, I feel like, I don't know, do I really want to go out and meet somebody for a drink? And I realized that partially it's that shift, and then partially it's what you were saying earlier, which is we're not, I don't know that our psyche thinks we're out of the woods yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just really appreciated what you were saying, because I've been saying that for a little while now, and you're the first person that echoed that to me.
I'm glad.
Everybody else kind of feels like, oh, my, I can't wait to get out there. I can't wait to get on a cruise ship. I can't wait to go on a vacation. And I'm kind of saying, yeah, I'm okay still hunkering down a little bit.
And there's a lot to process, too, because you have a life with your husband that's kind of replaying throughout your psyche as you move into that grieving period. And it's a strangely beautiful time, isn't it? Because you get to say, this is my limit, or this is what I will and will not do, and don't cross my boundaries.
Right. And it's kind of like what Michael, the previous caller, was saying. Now enough time has gone by that everybody kind of expects that to be over.
Right.
Because, you know, they yes. haven't seen you in 15 months. And, you know, by this period of time, everybody thinks, okay, well, you're done with that. But it's weird when you grieve privately and silently, because when it doesn't have a voice, when nobody kind of, you know, acknowledges it, sometimes you're left with, did that even really happen?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and as I also mentioned to Michael, what no one ever talks about, because we don't teach people to grieve. We don't teach the things that skills people really need. But when you've lost someone significant, that first year really is a bubble. Your psyche does protect you. So you had the double bubble of the loss of your husband and then the pandemic loss. And the real grief doesn't really start to happen until after year one. And so when everyone's rushing in saying, you need to get back out there, you need to clean out that closet, right? You need to move forward. It's usually right at the time that people are actually stepping into the grief. And
right.
That's a lesson that our whole culture needs to understand, is that grief does not happen instantaneously. You know, at the beginning, we're just in shock. Grief is what happens right. after the shock.
Right. And the other thing that happens is there's a huge influx of activity around you,
yes.
cards.
Yes.
And then it all goes away. So what I always do when someone passes away or when someone has a baby is I wait. I bring the stuff 2 months later
yes.
when nobody else is down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Debbie, thank you for taking
thank
the time
you.
To call me. I really appreciate knowing you're out there.
Thank you. I really appreciate knowing you're out there too, and I'll be listening.
Good. Welcome to the show.
Bye-bye.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're back in the studio taking calls. It feels good. 805-781-3875 is our number. If you want to share what's on your mind, how you've been since we last talked, where you are in your pandemic grieving, post-pandemic process. David, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Oh.
Hi.
Well, hi. Yeah, coming home, and I heard what you were starting to talk about, and it just I had to pull over and try to call you, because I've gone through grief of losing people through this year, but right now it feels like we're not through this yet, and I feel comfortable not going out, and I'm guarded, and I feel that's okay. From what we've gone through in the last 15 months is horrific, and I don't think we've really gone through that. I mean, the last time anybody went through this was, what, 100 years ago?
Right.
And, you know, it just, I came down halfway through this. I came down with cancer in September. I was diagnosed in August, and I had to deal with going through chemotherapy and radiation and all that stuff through the end of the year, and it was like a double whammy, because I was immunocompromised, so I could not go out, and it really hit me, whereas if I go out, I'm dead. basically, because I'm even in worse shape than people are walking around with a normal immune system, and they're taking the chances of going out and not wearing a mask, or even, so, you know, I would distance myself from crowds and everything like that, and I still do that now.
How are you feeling now?
I'm cancer-free. I'm good. 7 months.
That's fantastic. You know, it's life continued on through the pandemic, and I think that's what shocked people the most. Like, wait, I can't get cancer. I have to deal with the pandemic. Put that on hold, please. It's probably the last thing you were looking for. And so do you find yourself leaning on a support group, your support system, your people more, or do you find yourself solo? You know, are you reaching out and staying connected, or are you kind of moving through this on your own?
I've got a support group, but since all this happened, like the people in my neighborhood, we started, you could see what was going on, and they needed this, or there were problems going on socioeconomically. So we would reach out and help immediately around the area, and we became a very tight-knit group, like in our neighborhood, and that continues now, and I don't think that's going to end anytime soon. We've developed a nice bond because we were there when it got bad, and I feel I feel in a good place, and I'm thankful.
So you mentioned at the start of your call that you didn't feel ready, though. You didn't think we were through this yet, or you didn't feel ready to kind of call it over. Where do you feel we're going?
I think it's going to linger for another, I don't know, I would say another year or two. It's not going anywhere away because you're still having breakouts all over the world, different strains, and it only takes one, and the airports are opening again. And my wife's over in England right now, and there's strains going on over there, and I'm really worried for her. But she had to go over there on a family emergency, her sister, and so she's over there right now. And so I'm in contact with her every day, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I just had day at a time and make sure it's each day I try to make it the best.
Yeah, and that was my follow-up question. So what is one little thing about you that has shifted in the last 15 months? How are you different besides being a cancer survivor?
Well, I think I'm more tolerant of people's differences or whatever it is. I will stop and just count to 15 or so, and then understand what they might be going through, and they're having it hard too. So I think I'm more compassionate, I think, but guarded.
Guard and compassion. I can understand that. Because in some ways it feels like people are more on edge, but at the same time, more people I've talked to say, I feel grounded and more accepting than I did prior to the pandemic. So it's interesting to know there's almost like this sense of some people are more on edge and ready to bark, but then a whole other segment of the population says, no, I'm just going to take things as it comes.
Yeah, I think with that, it's, you have to. I mean, life, well, when you look at it, life has become too short. Mm-hmm. Things happen. I've lost friends, and it's funny because when, like, I couldn't see my daughter or my grandson and extend family, and there were days where I broke down and I cried. I'm going, why am I crying? And it's just because I can't go and see them. I can call them, but physically seeing them or touching them, the contact, that's where it is. You have lost the contact, physical contact. And I think that's that's not being addressed. And I think that has a huge factor in it, too.
Absolutely. David, thank you so much for taking the time to call, and congratulations on being cancer-free and for finding this new neighborhood connection. That's great.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you. Call in again, please. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And let's just wrap things up a little. I'm here in the studio. I feel thankful to be able to talk to you again and to be able to have these conversations. And I want to continue over the next few weeks to really kind of grapple with where we are, because I think we're guardedly coming through to something different. Maybe the variants continue and we continue dealing with the pandemic or with COVID, but something else has shifted, fundamentally shifted. People are finding different ways to connect to themselves and to each other and interact with the world. That we are not the same people we were when we stepped into this 15 months ago. And I think part of the healing is for us to do our own work about what has shifted. How am I different than I was 15 months ago? How do I see and view the world differently? There is no push or rush to get back to what was normal before, because it's no longer there. The whole world landscape has shifted. And so where will we find ourselves? And if you are starting to feel more anxious and depressed and wonder, how can I be when I'm vaccinated and the world is okay? This is the normal response. This is a normal response to living through a disaster or trauma, is to start to feel the psychological repercussions later. So sit with them and sit with us next Tuesday. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Send me a message through Facebook or Instagram. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Thank you for tuning in this Tuesday at 2. I look forward to seeing you again, or listening and speaking with you again next week. And thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.